I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Chairman, I move to approve the Rob County check sheet for January 16, 2018. We have accounts payable check cycle date January 22nd through January 26th, 2018, in the amount of $1,484,993.51.
Items note, Tom?
Yeah, I seconded it.
Oh, yeah.
That's okay, I got it.
Is that a second?
What a stressful morning.
For your notes, these accounts payable are from three different list of vouchers that I emailed you all last week. Of note here, I've got payments to Associated Governments of Northwest Colorado, $18,201. This is for the BCC office. $1,200 of that is for the area agency in aging, and the $17,000 was for membership dues for 2018. And also for 2018, membership dues of $18,000 paid to Colorado Counties, Inc. And in this cycle was included my membership to ICMA. My membership dues for 2018 is $1,376. And then we have payments to realauction.com. This is the treasurer's, and this was her tax lien sale, online sale, $660 for this service. Payment to National Association of Counties, and this is also from BCC office dues for 2018, $460. We had a payment to CWH Properties. This is from Road Bridge Royal Bridge budget, and the royalties owed from two invoices from October and December of 2017 for a total of $5,320. And also we had payments from the Road and Bridge budget for the front royalties to the State Land Board at $3,192. These are also from October through December of 2017. And then we had the two payments for the Purchase of Development Rights Program to the Land Title Company for the PDR projects for the Knott House Place PDR project, conservation easement, and also the High Country Lamb Maniotis PDR project, $500,000 to the Knott Home and $750,000 to the High Country Lamb.
Any questions, comments? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Aye. Kevin, you want to come up? I think you were here for the ratification of on the Atlantic Aviation. I don't think we need to pull it.
Do you want to read what we did yesterday?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm backseat driving.
That's all right. So we had a, yesterday we had our county manager update, our legal update, and then we also met and had a work session regarding the annual review of the county attorney.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve consent agenda items A through D.
Second.
Any other discussion or anything? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Good morning.
Good morning. So what do we got?
So we are here this morning to answer any questions and provide any descriptions as well as obtain a signature for our emergency management performance. This is an annual application issue every year, and there are several parts to it. But the primary part is the work plan, which we have to identify all those key emergency management preparedness type of programs that we're going to work on for the year. And then it's signed by the commissioners, or at least by a commissioner, and then it's also signed by Dan as my supervisor, and then myself. then Chuck Bell for the state's field management officer.
Are we getting more this year than we did last year?
No, so what happened is, I guess traditionally, we've been around 72, 73,000, and then when in 2016, we didn't meet all the thing requirements, so our 2017 allotment was reduced to 60,000. And then when I spoke to Mr. Vail about a month or so ago, and their new process that they're going to is they're categorizing the counties basically based on population. And so Route County, I believe, is Tier 3 county, and all Tier 3 counties are counted at 60,000. So I guess you could say that.
So how do they figure that Tier 3? Is that based on population?
I believe it's population, when I talked to Chuck. There may be a few other variables in there, which I haven't seen their actual. He said they're coming out just in a more official process. I haven't seen them. So it looks like the way they did it is, you know, it was briefed to us originally that, well, because the county failed to do some things in 2016, that money's reduced, but it seemed more like it was an opportune time to say, well, we're going to go to 60,000 anyway, and they just used that as an opportunity for 2017. But the category that Route County is in, if it's either two or three, would be capped at 60,000.
Got it. Seems fairly arbitrary just to base it on population. I mean, different counties have got different levels of risk,
right?
Based on the terrain.
Until I actually see that their written policies, which isn't out yet, that was all just a discussion I had with Chuck Bale. The only other thing different.
So, are they going to make that policy public, or are they just going to keep it in house so we keep us in limbo?
I believe it's supposed to be public.
Yes, Mr. Mushroom.
The only other thing that's a little different from last year is that. I'm sorry. I just turned mine off. The only thing.
Just so it's not an emergency.
That's my personal phone. The only different thing from last year is that. What we had to do last year is because when I came on board and it was a new position of emergency operations director, and so some of my time is allocated to the RCC, which does not fall under AMPG, and some of my time, the majority of my time, was as emergency manager. Then we had to identify, well, I think we arbitrarily said, well, 90% of my time was here and 10% of my time. So we had to go into all these machinations of the budget and staffing and all this kind of stuff. So what we're doing instead this year is we're just taking me off the personnel roster, and we're only going to have Cheryl. That way, all of that, the money based on personnel, based off of Cheryl's staff. So we only get $60,000 anyway.
No matter what.
Right. So with her salary plus our budget, it's over $123,000.
You're covering $60,000 easy.
And now I don't have to worry about a timesheet that says I spent 10% of my time or no more than 10% of my time on comms issues. So that's the only other. You'll see some differences in our staffing, but it won't affect anything as well as the grant that we received.
So it's you're getting paid no matter what. It's just how much is going to each one of the departments.
Correct.
And
so we had
FTE.
And we didn't do it. So I inherited the work plan last year, and we didn't do a timekeeping. And Chuck was saying, well, if you're going to do it the way you're doing, where we have Cheryl's on there, plus we have 90% of my time, then I have to come up with a daily timekeeping. It's exact since how much time I spent on EM versus comp. And since it's not going to impact what we receive, it just seemed like an unnecessary step to do.
So that's fine.
And the last little bit of discussion that I had with Chuck is, like I said, I called him because this is the first work plan I initiated. And so I got some information on, you know, what's required and all that. So I think the takeaway that I like to make sure that and I like to convey that the way I understand now is that the work plan is a general plan, but it's not specific to the point where, you know, they go through and say, well, you need to do this check. They just want to see that you have a general productive plan ahead and that you're making progress. So that's just a little bit of guidance I received from Chuck.
Ready for a motion?
Yep.
Is it, whose signature? Is it your signature or Doug's?
It'll be Commissioner Monger's signature.
Okay.
Chair. And then after that, it'll be the deputy county manager and then Chuck Vale himself.
Okay.
On this one. After this one, there's some additional forms, but that's between either Dan Stinnett or myself.
That's fine, just for the purpose of the motion. Mr. Chairman, I move to approve and authorize your signature on the Emergency Management Performance Grant, Local Emergency Manager Support Program, funding grant application for calendar year 2018.
Second.
Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Thank you.
Okay, we got consideration to approve a request to reclassify a position from Motor Vehicle Deputy Clerk Administrative 4 to Motor Vehicle Operations Manager Deputy Clerk Administrative 5. So, Kathy, you want to lead off?
Yeah, Kim Bonner is here and Candace Powers is here. And Kim is requesting approval to reclassify Candace's position. This position will include additional responsibilities to support the motor vehicle supervisor, including employee staffing, management, training, and operations. The position is, one of the reasons why the position is also being changed is because legislation was passed during 2014-2015 granting funding for the Colorado Drives project by the Colorado Department of Revenue and Governor's Office of Information Technology. And Drives is expected to go live in county motor vehicle departments statewide August 6th. So Candace will be responsible for attending a six-week training session early 2018 for the purpose of training and supporting the motor vehicle office during the conversion of the new Drive system. She will also be responsible for helping the current motor vehicle supervisor with the training of new employees on the Drive system and maintaining it. In addition, she will continue to carry out her duties of the motor vehicle deputy clerk. So due to the additional job responsibilities and her current responsibilities, this position exceeds the qualifications of an administrative assistant 4 and now meets the qualifications of an administrative assistant 5. So we would like to move her to an administrative assistant 5 with your approval. In addition, she is working at step 10 of the administrative 4 pay scale. So when she gets, or if she is reclassified, she will be working at, she will move to step 7 of the administrative assistant 5 pay scale, which will allow a 5% increase in salary.
So my only question is, since I'll be making the motion, is when is it effective?
February 19th.
Okay, so just basically next pay period.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So my question is this a temporary thing, or are we going to be, we're going to have, because we still have the deputy clerk motor vehicle, so are we going to have two of them at that point in time? Is this the new normal?
We'd have 3 deputy clerks at a grade 4.
Okay.
And then we'd have Barb and Candy at a 5. I see this as being pretty ongoing, kind of like the Munich.
Because we did this also on a temporary basis.
Right. When Barb was gone.
Medical issues. So.
So I would say this would be permanent unless at some point in time we have a candidate who can handle it all. But, you know, both the technical end and the supervisory end. But she tends to be called on even now that she's still not even a supervisor by her other peers. So I'd say permanent.
I appreciate the honesty.
So,
all right. I mean,
so this for the software and then simplifying our lives.
Yeah, it's going to take 2 less people to run it, you know. So,
it's 6 weeks of training is pretty impressive.
Well, there's other counties who have had employees there for 18 months. They've been testers and expert users and that type of thing. But those were the big counties.
Where do you go to do the training?
Denver.
And so, yeah, in the budget, I had to include
travel,
all that extra money. We get reimbursed. for it, but once a month from the state. So
for all of her expenses, hotel room, meals, travel, all that. Good. Glad to hear that.
And I don't know if you ever heard feedback from when driver's license went live on the new program. You know, when they everything's so tiny on there, they had a lot of glitches. And there's some clerks, especially from the Front Range, that are really kind of upset about the timing. It's August 6th, and keep saying, what happens if it turns out
for the implementation of the new drive system? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. That day, we're all live on the new system.
Oh, my.
Right,
we're
right,
not
right,
running
right,
anything
right,
like
right,
concurrently
right,
or anything.
Right.
Okay, you ready for a motion?
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move that we reclassify Candace Powers' position from motor vehicle deputy clerk administrative assistant 4 to a motor vehicle operations manager deputy clerk administrative assistant 5, effective in the next pay period.
Second.
Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Very good.
Great. Thank you very much.
I almost thought we were mad.
So we record it, and then it also, in case somebody wanted to dial in on the phone,
sure.
We have a bunch of phone outlets so people can
great.
Listen into the conversation.
Great.
So,
great.
Andy, I appreciate you coming up, and Hunter, I appreciate you very much, and coming and introducing yourself. And first few days, he handled himself well in the in our Commissioner Frying class.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that was the one down in Grand Junction where I saw all the photos from it.
Yeah.
Well, I think Doug deserves some credit for throwing some water on that fire.
He does. I thought Doug. I was telling Doug the other day when I saw him at our meeting that he did an excellent job of articulating what it is the River District does and why it's not shouldn't be subject to particular partisan county control.
Yeah,
so,
no, I think that helped a lot.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Although I guess we're still going to hold you responsible.
Actually, Andy helped. He actually admitted, he says, well, I didn't want to change the tenor of your tone.
Yeah,
of course, that would have been pretty hard. You'd have had to you could have rewritten one sentence. You could have changed the tenor of my tone because I don't speak so well or write so well.
Well, you know what the problem is?
It was important that I had your voice, too.
I appreciate that.
But we can hold you responsible for the snowpack.
Right.
You can still apply to attend.
You know,
that's okay. I'm good to go.
Your snowpack is better than the folks down in the Southwest.
That's scary.
It is.
Because there's nothing here.
Grab a chair, Kevin. Yeah. Come on up too, or sit over here.
Yep.
Do you know Aaron?
I do. Well, okay. we have a meeting after this to get to know each other better, but we have run across each other. So good to see you.
And everybody knows Kevin, so.
Yes. See you. But I just wanted to take this opportunity to see what you all had on your radar. I think, I'm happy to kind of, I guess I don't want to be too basic. I would imagine you guys understand what the River District is and does, and really, you know, Doug is an excellent member of our board.
And actually, I think you should lead off every meeting just giving a brief blurb of what it is you guys do.
You think so?
Instead of assuming that everybody
That's a fair...
Because I would say up until about a year ago, I wasn't aware of really what the Colorado River District did.
Well, and that's important. I mean, that's... And I think we have that issue with our... With getting out kind of what our mission is and why we even exist. So I think the simplest way to put it is that we were formed in 1937 as a regional government, and we represent the land area of 15 counties. We're governed by a board of directors, one from each county. We have our own independent mill levy, and we're a unique government in that we have two statutory charges. One is to protect the water resources of the Colorado River for use by the people who live in western Colorado, and the other is to protect Colorado's share of the Colorado River in the basin, so the entire state's river share. And if you think about that, we're probably one of, I'm not even sure I'm aware of any other government agencies that exist that have no regulatory role. We are not regulators. We don't have that role at all. We're advocates. We're advocates for everybody here in Rouse County and everybody on the Western Slope. And that gives us a very different perspective on a lot of water issues. Sometimes with the regulators. We occasionally butt heads because we're out there advocating, not because we have personal vendettas, but just that we're, you know, we are out there, and that's but that's our job. And I think going back to the 30s, there was a recognition that individual water users on the Western Slope needed a collective voice to advocate. And you know, you see some of our more sophisticated water users hire high-dollar water lawyers and engineers, but the reality is that most family ranches can't afford that. And how do they protect their water use and their ability to have a livelihood? And it's through us. And it is a little scary to say we're with the government, we're here to help, but in this instance, it's actually pretty applicable. So we do. That's what I have to say, coming from my background, I was a private practice attorney for 20 years in the natural resource world, primarily based out of Ouray, Colorado. And you know, my clientele were folks on the Western Slope. For me, this was an easy step to just representing more of the folks on the Western Slope than just my prior clients. So it's really, it's enjoyable, and I really am honored to be able to do it.
So this is a maybe a naive question, but so when you're advocating and representing people that have water rights that don't necessarily have a team of lawyers,
right?
Do you usually find that the water right holders that have a team of lawyers in the Colorado River District are pushing in the same direction, or?
Most of the time we're pushing the same direction.
You do? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say this about the water world. It's a pretty collaborative world. And so, you know, on a lot of our...
Not in my neck of the woods.
Not in your
neck?
Okay.
But I'm glad you're doing.
He lives up in the upper Yampa.
Okay, all right. Well, some neighborhoods are a little more controversial than others. But in general, well, I mean, really, if you go back to the 30s, when we were formed, the district spent its first 20, probably 30-year plus in court, in litigation, with Denver and Northern Water and Colorado Springs and Aurora. And while we still enter into their water cases when they're filing on the Western Slope, and even when they're filing near the Western Slope, we generally tend to go into it to figure out how we can get what we need or what the water users on the West Slope need, but also understand that they have needs that need to be met. And Denver's, I think they're probably the best example of a large Trans Mountain birder who is willing to really look at basin of origin impacts and try to mitigate what their impacts are. And that was not always the case. So, you know, we look at that as we're still in court, but most of it is negotiations and collaboration.
Not knee-jerk, anti-Trans Mountain diversions.
Right. Well, I think we all have
kind of
get there.
It's not so knee-jerk, though.
No. we're not a big fan of Trans Mountain diversions. We have a policy about how we oppose them. It's a couple pages long. But I would say that the reality is we recognize that a vital, you know, an economically strong Front Range is how our communities, such as Steamboat and our other communities, really survive. Is that without that symbiotic relationship, we would struggle on the Western Slope. So.
And we're also aware that, you know, the compact call is not that far off.
Yeah.
You know, and you need to keep that in quite in close mind.
Yeah.
And then we feel that probably if something like that happens, West Slope Ag is going to be the first to be tackled.
Yeah, and that's really, I mean, our job is to look out in the future on those interstate issues and say, you know, and you guys are one of the things the River District has been doing for the last several years and is doing is sponsoring a risk study. So the risk is, how close are we to a compact curtailment? How close are we to overuse of Colorado's share of the river? And we got a lot of pushback from the Front Range on that, and in particular the collaboration of Front Range Trans Mountain diverters. They call themselves the Front Range Water Council, and they you know, they should have a big black ship somewhere that they live in, but they really don't want those answers. They don't want that science because, in large part, the answer for them is there should always be water on the West Slope for them to divert. And
that's going to be an assumption that we're moving forward on.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what they want to do, yes.
And we have to look at that and we have to say, well, wait a minute. If we're close to or about to exceed our allotment under the, and if we're not alone, if in fact at the same time we're using more water, that we have a diminishing flow of water into Lake Powell, either due to drought or climate change, then, you know, and you couple that with the overuse of water in the lower basin, and we're headed for a disaster, which, for, you know, as that disaster would be a curtailment coming up the river, where do we see that relief valve? And the Front Range says, well, we can just keep diverting more because it won't be us that will be the relief valve. And that's why they don't really care where we are on that allotment usage.
I was just going to say, it does seem like there are some Front Range utilities that are seeing,
yes,
that, you know, actually, you know, more TMDs could put their existing water rights at risk during a compact call. So,
and I would actually say Denver is a particular one. They're actually more aligned with the River District on new Trans Mountain diversions and the risk posed to the entire state than many of the other Front Range entities.
Well, I'd like to just chime in that's not just a TMD, but even additional use in the Yampa Basin is something that's being scrutinized.
Or any basin, the West Slope.
Or any basin on the West Slope.
Yeah.
And the position that the Yampa Basin has had is that we use such a small amount of our own native flow that we should have an apportionment of that flow for our own use. And
just like the Colorado River Compact.
Just like the Colorado River Compact. The Colorado River Compact gave Colorado a certain amount of that use. And they first cracked that nut between the upper and lower basin and then between the states. And the IBCC was put together to crack that nut between the basins within the state of Colorado. And that has moved forward in fits and starts over the last decade.
Yeah. In fact, the Interbasin Compact Committee, I don't know if you're familiar, but that's the idea when it was formed, was to reach a point where there would be a compact by which we would divide up the water. And the Yampa certainly made its position clear. I would say that's an issue within our river district constituents where there is not unanimity in terms of the Yampa's ability to set that aside.
In other words, it's not just
to be fair.
It's not just the Front Range that wants to steal our water, our neighbors,
right,
around,
right,
us.
Right. Well, what
they don't want to steal.
They want to
make sure ours goes down the river.
To protect their use, because
exactly.
For instance, the Gunnison has fairly significant development of water in the Gunnison already, and they're saying, well, we need to keep water flowing down to meet the compact, so it should come out of the Yampa so that we don't
have to. Because we've got some.
Yeah, right. So, and the interesting thing, and it's something, I think Kevin's very familiar with this, is that when you look at development over the last 20 years in the state of Colorado, both on the West Slope and on the Front Range, there's actually a surprising leveling and even dropping in many of the basins in terms of the amount of actual consumptive use of water. So even as our populations have grown and our uses of water have changed, we're actually seeing through conservation and through just awareness a lower consumptive amount. And I think that challenges the paradigm of we have to have more water set aside for development. So you have to look at that and understand what that means. Because, you know, for instance, the Northeast Colorado, where the Colorado Big Thompson Project brings the Colorado River water over, and historically was agricultural. As Fort Collins and that mega city roll out into the ag land out there, they, even though they're developing in a what we consider a high water use suburban style of development, where there are just lots of acreage of Kentucky bluegrass, their residential development is consuming less water than the ag they're replacing. And then you go to Denver and you see the reduction in use because they're growing up more than they're growing out, and their per capita use is even, you know, continues to drop as they do that. So
what's the limits of that, though? I mean, conservation can only take you so far.
Sure.
And how close are we to achieving maximum conservation?
Well, based on the Israeli gentleman that I saw that, and were you there?
We're not even close.
Not even like, we haven't even like, scratched the
surface. Until we start really using that effluent, you guys.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I was amazed by their water efficiency.
Yeah.
So, you know, but the question is, you know, how do you make sure you have enough water in the Yampa to do what the people in the Yampa want to do?
And the other problem is that it's great for the Front Range to be able to conserve all this water. How much can, I mean, we don't really have the ability to conserve that much water here because we don't have that much residential development where you could.
But yet, you know, you'd be surprised when Mount Warner passed their water restrictions, how much less water they did use even per capita during that.
Per capita, but in terms of total amount of water, it's a smaller amount of water.
When I was first on the city council, I went up and met with Jay Gallagher, and we have like a whole nother virtual reservoir, like in a whole nother long lake that we literally use irrigating Kentucky bluegrass every year in the city of Steamboat Springs, Mount Warner water area, just that 8 square miles.
But it still hasn't made a big effect. It has not. It adds up.
It adds up.
Yep. It does add up. And part of it is, I mean, as the West Slope, we push, in Denver, when we were dealing with the Colorado River Cooperative Agreement that we reached, one of the huge issues we pushed for on the Front Range was conservation.
Right.
Demanded certain levels of conservation, and I have to say it is a bit hypocritical when we're over there screaming at them about conservation, and we are allowing land use to occur where there is unfettered irrigation of suburban style development. I mean that's in it. So we have to. I'm not ever going to tell a land use authority what they should do, but it's something we would hope that you would think about in your land use decisions and in your.
So when we first started our basin implementation plan, and we were having the municipal part of that,
yeah,
we wanted to put in the same kind of thing about the Front Range, about saving water,
yeah,
and City of Craig just hit the roof.
Yeah.
Hey, we just built a plant.
Yeah.
We got to pay it off.
We
want to send as much water down through there to pay for the plant.
Yeah.
And we had the same kind of conversation with the city as well. So, we got to pay. So that kind of becomes the conundrum.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you got a good base charge and then not matching it so much on use, but even then, I don't know, taxing them more on the overuse or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, we're not in a shortage here, and yet how can we go ask Denver to go shut their water down when we're out here sprinkling in the middle of noontime, you know?
Well, they're growing at such an exponential rate over anything we're seeing that you have to...
Yeah, but we've got projections looking at the doubling of Rob County's population within 20 or 30 years. Do we have enough water to support that human population?
It's still such a small part of overall water use.
Yeah.
And it's easy. When I first went to work for Fort Collins in, when was that, 81, doing stormwater work, and I'd be out there and we'd be sampling, you know, things in the disturbed streams, and what we were sampling was drinking water, because there was so much irrigation that the gutters on a hot summer day would be flowing half full. And when I said something to the water resources manager, the response I got was, don't worry about it, that's going downstream. The irrigators are using them, and it's all good. And so, you know, when we talk about the great reductions they've made, I just want to make it clear
where they started from. Yeah, true. And they can do better. And there's a lot of room on conservation, I would say. But
that's a strong argument not to support any more Trans Mountain diversions. Yes. Just tell them to conserve and be done with it.
Well, and it's not just conserve, it's reuse. And that's one of the other elements that we've really pushed on the Front Range and Denver agreed to is a reuse of a lot of their water. Once that Trans Mountain water goes over the hill, they actually have the right to reuse and use and reuse
to extinction.
Right? So that we actually wrote that into their obligation, and that's part of them funding their water recycling plan and the WISE project for Southeast Colorado, or Denver, the Denver metro area. I just met with Aurora last Friday, and they're talking about their intentions on reuse and how they're going to continue to recycle and grow that. You know, frankly, you look at major issues that or major projects that could benefit the entire state, a desal plant over there, because that the effluent that they have to recycle and then reuse is very high salinity and high dissolved solids. And so right now, in order to get it back into shape to reuse, they're mixing it 2-to-1 with fresh mountain water. What we want them to do is not have a 2-to-1 mix, but be able to reuse that water, which means they actually have to chemically or physically treat that water. And you know, is that something that their ratepayers could pay? Yes. But is it something that perhaps the state should all get behind? Because it means, you know, less likely Trans Mountain versions for us? Absolutely. And that's my take.
The other thing you got to be concerned about, I mean, and it hasn't changed much yet either, is that water runs to money, and the cheapest water out there is still buying fresh water off the rancher and the cattle, the farmer.
And that's true for our ag communities, whether they're on the eastern plains or in the west slope. So it is, we're very concerned about that. I mean, the River District has historically and does currently value, and our job is to protect Western Slope Ag. So how do we do that?
And the same thing, you know, the subsidiary industries, we don't want to be the Crowley County and Rocky Ford and the rest. When you run out, when your ag's gone, then you lose your parts department, you lose your tractor company, you lose your seed company, the mills, and everything.
So. Especially as much money as we continue to spend on conservation easements.
Right.
Well, when we're
of course, but no,
we're saving the water with it.
We are. That's a good thing, because we're encumbering water.
Yeah. Right. No, and that's great. You know, I would ask. I mean, in the Yampa Basin, to think about, you know, you've got some industrial uses of water right now in your power plants. That, depending on which forecast you read, you talk to the kind of the corporate execs. Though the life of those plants is not a perpetual given existence, they're looking, you know, Craig number one is shutting down in the near future, and I would expect to see additional shutdowns and non-reinvestment into those facilities, not driven by the regulatory world, but just sheer
because that's what it is.
And so the question for the Yampa Basin is, that's some significant consumptive use of those water rights. Who's got their eyes on that? Who owns those? Where are they going? What would the community want those rights used for? And how would those rights, there's probably between those plants, the Craig plants in Hayden, you're probably looking at 25,000 acre feet of water a year, consumptive use. That's a lot of water.
So I talked to Jackie about that.
An acre foot basically holds 2 homes a year. Is that?
We'd like soon to see that 3 homes, but right. 2 is probably a good general.
What's that, for frame of reference? What's the size of Stagecoach Reservoir?
36,000.
So, you know, 2/3 of Stagecoach Reservoir.
Yeah, that's not a small amount of water. And you know, River District is not here to tell anybody what to do with it, but it's. Part of our job is to look ahead and say, well, what does the community want to do?
Well,
and what does the water right holder want to do with that? And who else is looking at that?
Yeah, we might want to think about that person, too.
I mean, I guess the question is how much do we know about any of that? And right now, it's all speculation. And what we use for our master plan for our water rights is the Statewide Water Supply Initiative study.
Is what?
The statewide SWASI, they call it. The statewide water supply initiative, okay? And that was the last door of it. And so in all this planning, there's also, you know, the hardball legal side of things. And Erin, doing her job, you know, asks us these very same questions. And all we can do is respond that we use the state studies to come up with the demands in the basin for the next 50 years, so we didn't gin those up at all. And then we looked at them through the best scientific information that's available on what happens hydrologically here, which is the tree rings, because they weren't trying to spin anything or make up a drought. And during severe droughts, the storage here is, you know, with those uses, is entirely
sustained,
totally used up. And what we know from hydrology is if it's happened in the past, it's going to happen again in the future. We don't know when. We don't know when we're going to enter these things. On top of that, we've got global warming, which is likely to make situations worse. And a lot of the studies that are going on out there, the global warming hydrology is not as bad, especially for long-term droughts, that we see in the tree ring record. So we have to use some conservative numbers. To flip what you're saying is regarding, you know, is this really a problem and how much are we going to use? If one believes that it's really not a problem, then one should not have a problem being equitable with the amount of water that the AMPA can have in the future. And that takes the pressure off us developing anything too quickly. Without that, we are indeed in a race, and that's the situation we've been put in now, because I was told before Dick Wolf retired that in meetings, and I don't know how true this is, it's hearsay, but in meetings, you know, not where somebody was sitting there like myself going, well, how are you going to administer the compact? It was, well, right now we probably just do it by appropriation date. And we are junior.
Yeah.
So we are at risk. Droughts are going to happen. And if you want to have water, which is the major limiting factor in all of Colorado, that's why we're here talking about it, we're looking for some.
And what do you mean when you
assurance?
Say we are junior?
I mean, the most of the water, so Stagecoach Reservoir,
okay,
for example, is junior to Dillon.
Okay.
So if
all of the AMPA water, other than the historic ranch rights, are junior to everywhere.
Because, well, because we've got so little storage.
Yeah, well, exactly, that's part of it. Right. Yeah, and it was late.
And we didn't have populations come in here just recently.
Right.
So, I mean, other than the ag rights that are...
And my guess is that, as the most inexperienced water guy in the room, is that anything post-compact is probably going to be at risk. The swingway probably isn't going to be between Stagecoach and Dillon.
That's what we keep hearing.
If it's even administered that way.
That's what people keep saying, and that's why we keep asking the question. Yeah.
So that's your argument in favor of giving into some equity now.
Exactly.
Right.
Continue to ask for it.
Yeah, and I would say...
If we're equitable with our water, then we stand a chance to receive it in reverse.
Well, every time we have these conversations, then we hear statements like that. Well, okay, that's what the IDCUC was created for, to have those discussions, not to have people sitting around a table go, this is how it's really going to go down.
Well, one thing we know, we don't want to have a legislator.
We can all agree on that.
Yes. So the, I mean, and Kevin is follows it and is involved in it very closely, the risk study that the River District is basically pushing and leading with the basin roundtables is really developing a modeling tool where we can see what the impacts of certain forms of curtailment, what they would look like on each basin. And I think part of our position at the River District is it's our job to develop the data so that the policy discussion can occur. And so, you know, for instance, we've gotten to a point where, I'm not the modeling geek, but essentially you can tie the state modeling, water modeling rights system into the Bureau of Reclamation system for the big river, and you can, hopefully we can with reasonable certainty within the basins figure out if you do a 10% reduction in each basin, what will happen if you do, for instance, the AMPA roundtable has said, hey, look, we want to see a carve out for us and what that would look like in the other basins, because we want to understand what the impact of our request is on everybody. We want everybody to know the facts so that we can then talk about it and try to reach an agreement on it. And I think that without that information, it's a lot of, frankly, fear-mongering that goes on, and people dig into their positions. And so our job in large part of the River District is to help develop that data so we can have an informed discussion about what the future looks like. And
And you've done a and the district has done a spectacular job with that. When IVCC, you know, was stymied for whatever reason, going to the River District picked that up and moved.
Well, he already mentioned the reason was that this guy, you know,
yeah,
nobody really wanted to know the answer.
Yeah. Right.
Do you do that with your staff that develops that data, or do you hire some contractors?
We have a contractor who does most of it, and we, that person, it's interesting, the state, among other agencies, have tried to hire him away from the River District, and we actually have him locked in. So, because we would like it to be
objective. Another example of you guys wasting money over there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. No, it's a really specialized skill to be able to do this modeling, and John Karen is his name, is Hydros Consulting. He's actually out of Boulder, but does a phenomenal job, and his data is, it's funny, so the Front Range was convinced that we were slanting all of that information, so we gave them the tool to use, and they had one of their own people, Kerry Sundin, go in and look at it, and Denver paid him to run his own modified model, and in the words of Jim Lockhead, the head of Denver Water, he said, so we came up with the exact answers you did. We verified the tool. You know, you were right. That's where, and that's what we want, is we want the arguments about bias and position to go away, and we want to actually talk about fact and how that looks and be able to really nail that down. So
yeah, and we've never, I mean, you know, while we have been strong in our position, I mean, I think the Upper Yampa District and the River District has done a great job of making that, you know, a tool available. And I mean, a little bit of the history was the risk study was going down, how do you administer the compact, and then was pulled back from that, you know, by the other interests. And there's a lot of ways, 22 swing date, cutting back everybody across the board, you know, and an apportionment.
So the bottom problem right now is we're just trying to administer things so that we don't get to that place.
Right.
So that we don't have that.
I mean, yeah, as Doug says, I mean, our goal is to avoid any kind of a compact curtail.
So we don't ever have to go
because
to that
it just, and we would like the state, we're involved in discussions with most of the Front Range TMD supporters and advocates to get some principles agreed to, that's not what we're not looking to figure out what we do once the call or the curtailment is on. We're involved to figure out how to avoid the curtailment.
So we're going to use data and facts to inform public policy?
That's a shocking.
And then on top of that, you have to do something so far ahead of the game. And that's what it's really showing. And having been involved.
And use foresight on top of all of that.
We'd have to like be the Netherlands of drought planning.
Yeah.
And that's probably.
But still, the problem is that yes,
some of us are still searching for it.
Where's your office located?
In Glenwood Springs.
And that's where you are.
Yeah,
that's
where I am. And Hunter's here mainly because he is our primary Yampa Basin staff member.
You guys know Dan Birch. He's been involved in the roundtable. So he's phasing out, so I'm trying to fill his shoes, or attempting to at least.
Okay.
So it'll take.
So when the round tables got formed, I mean, so every conservation district had that was in that round table had an appointment to it. The commissioners had an appointment to it. We have rec people appointed. So there's a slate of people that get appointed to it. And so the River District has an appointment to it. Yeah. And you know, it's been real good. I have to say that I was very leery when Dan. Well, especially when Eric first started out, that we were going to have, I was really leery, and I kept saying, "Hey, you know, we're the Yampa and White. You know, we maybe don't want to think like the Colorado. You know, right. We're going to have some different perspectives."
Yeah.
And I says, "I don't want to have Dan come in here and tell us how we need to do things, so that we're in alignment with the Gunnison and the rest." And then I'll have to say it's worked out really well. It hasn't happened that way.
I mean, I want you guys to hear that there's a lot of recognition at the River District staff level that we represent all of the basins, and we don't expect, doesn't mean that we advocate for the Gunnison. It means, again, our job is to get the information so there can be the dialogue and figure those things out. I practiced down in the Gunnison Basin for years, and it's totally different than the Yampa, and it's very different than the Colorado, and it's just, you got to recognize that and deal with it. So.
Well, we acknowledge quite often, and To Aaron, you know, we're still a century behind anybody, and we're half a century behind Gunnison, probably.
You know, to be fair, my practicing in your A, you're about the same.
So. All right, well, let's go ahead.
I'm very comfortable here, so yeah. Okay.
Do you guys have any questions?
No.
Andy,
for
sure. And again, I'll have to say that Andy did a great job at our commissioner bashing meeting. He really did a great job. He took it and made some obligations. I think all of us learned a little bit more on how to get out to us people up here, especially making the appointments and making sure the appointment has some reflection and responsibility back to the commissioners as well.
And the key is, if there's ever anything you see that we're not doing or that you think we could be helpful, give us a call. Tell Doug, but also call our staff. Call me. In fact, I can give you each one.
And yeah, thanks for coming up, because I think it's really great that we get to put a face
absolutely.
Here's to the organization.
Thank you.
I got you on speed dial.
I know.
And I was on the phone with Chris Drees today, and so, you know, I'll just sing some praises that the River District staff has always been available to your local water people, you know, to help answer questions and whatnot. So it's a great relationship, and really appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Great.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Nice. Very good, Andy. Thank you,
Bruce. Always good to see you.
Yeah, likewise.
Take it easy.
So did you think I was too rough on the
forest? Nice to meet you, too.
I was going to ask you that.
Nice to see you again.
Yep. Here.
That's what,
I got it out for you.
Okay, thank you. What a girl.
I need to read another one.
So, I, acting as chair, move that the Board of County Commissioners go into executive session to discuss legal affairs. I believe legal affairs and negotiation, probably, right?
This one here.
So to receive for a conference with the county attorney for the purpose of receiving legal advice on specific legal questions under CRS section 24-6-402, prints 4, prints B. I caution each participant to confine all discussion to the stated purpose of the executive session, and that no formal action may occur in the executive session if at any point in the executive session any participant believes that the discussion is going outside of the proper scope of the executive session. Please interrupt the discussion and make an objection. It is actually 1:38 right now, and we'll go from there.
Second.
Included on the executive session. Oh, we're going to do that afterwards. Is that what we've been doing lately? Okay. So any other discussion on the executive session motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Yep. So the time now is 2:10. And the executive session has just been concluded. The following persons were present at the executive session: Eric, the attorney; Sue, attorney staff; Dan Strenad, finance director; and the assistant county manager and county manager; and the three county commissioners. The board limited its discussion to the purpose stated in the motion to go into the executive session, and no formal action was taken.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to give direction that we ask our county attorney to see if we can retain Kuda Brock to help with the operating IGA for the combined law enforcement facility.
So we're just providing direction. We don't need a motion to do that. I don't think so either.
I'm fine with that.
I agree too. So, yep. So with that, we're adjourned.